So, in the last 2 years, there have been many papers devoted to the study of collective excitations in these trapped spaces. And apart from the general conceptual interest in studying collective phenomena in many body systems, I think that the main motivation for many people was due to the fact that the properties of collective excitations can be measured with very high precision, and so they provide a unique source of information for testing theoretical schemes and to learn more about the physics of these systems. I'd like to show here two figures that have been already shown in the first day. One is given by tessellation of the quadruple oscillation at MIT, where the precision in the frequency can be obtained with a very big, can be obtained in an excellent way, within less than 1% of the total frequency. A second example that has been shown, well, one can use the physics of collective excitation to learn more physics and to learn to get more information about interaction effects, is the one shown by Weimann. Well, by studying the oscillations of a condensator created in a new hyperfine state, one can learn about the value of the scattering length, or the changes in the scattering length in this new hyperfine state. And the precision of all these measurements is so high that one can really do very accurate analysis starting from this data. The problems connected with the elementary excitations are many, and it's impossible to discuss even a significant fraction of them. Here I would like to mention some of them. In particular, I will discuss in this talk about the double nature of elementary excitations in this system, which reveal essentially two features that are very interesting and characterize the microscopic nature of these objects. In particular, these systems can exhibit discretized modes, and this is a typical feature of a microscopic world like atomic nuclear physics or cluster physics, where one has the normal modes of the system, which are discretized. The other one is the nature of a condensed matter, and so the propagation of phonons to the microscopic nature of these objects. And in this context, it's interesting to discuss the role of deformations of this trap, and so to understand more about the role of dimensionality and to see what is the meaning of achieving 1D or 2D in these systems. Another topic that I will discuss is the competition between the collective and the single particle nature of elementary excitations. And this is relevant to describe the density of states of the system and to learn more about thermodynamics and to build ingredients for kinetic theories. There are other things that I will not mention here, in particular all the problems connected with thermal effects. These have been already discussed by several people during this workshop. In particular, Kertele gave some systematic discussion of what happens in sodium trapped gases concerning zero Fields and second sound and damping. Chris Pettig discussed the behavior of thermal effects in the classical regime. So there are many, many things connected with thermodynamics and the dynamics at fine temperature that it's impossible to discuss now. There is an interesting problem connected with the role of attractive forces. In particular, the main physics here is connected with the compressibility of the system, which becomes larger and larger as we reach the instability point. And the monopole oscillation is very sensitive to this parameter. And so interesting physics can be understood about collective excitations also for the attractive case. I would like to mention something in the second part of the talk about the role of quantized vortices. And so how to use collective excitations to learn on the possible existence and to have a signature of the existence of vortices if ever it will be possible to produce them in these systems. Then there are many other things like collective excitation binary mixtures, effects of nonlinearities and chaos that have been also discussed by this morning in one of the seminars this morning. Brief list of the people in Trento who have been working at this project. In particular, I would like to mention the collaboration with Lev Pitajewski. I will start by discussing the scale of energies in these systems. So here, the first scale of energy is given by the oscillator energy. So this discussion, in some sense, is complementary to the one of the first talk of this morning, where there was discussion on the length scales, which are, of course, closely related to the energy scales. So the oscillator energy, typically a few nanokelvins. Then we have the critical temperature that can be easily calculated in the ideal gas, which is in units of omega zero, goes like 10 to the 1/3, typically can be 20 to 100 times h bar omega zero, depending on n, of course. If we have interaction, however, we have a third important scale, which is given by a chemical potential. In Thomas Fermi limit, chemical potential increases as n to the 2/5. Typically, its value is between 5 and 50 omega zero, depending on the trapping configurations. This scale is interesting because if we've discussed frequency of elementary excitations, energy of elementary excitation, one should distinguish whether we are at energies below chemical potential or above chemical potential. If you are below chemical potential, then we speak of phonons. But even in that case, one has to distinguish between situation where the energy is close to omega zero, and in this case, these are discretized phonons, so these are normal modes of the system, or if the energy is larger than omega zero, significantly larger, where we can approximate these phonons in a continuum way. If you are at energies larger than chemical potential, we have single particle excitations. And so all these scenarios should be investigated in presence of traps. But typically this scenario is suggested by the analogy with the homogeneous gases, but there will be many important differences with respect to the uniform case, as I will try to discuss later. An interesting parameter to consider is the ratio between chemical potential and the critical temperature. This gives the position of this energy in this axis, and it's important to know what is this value. First, it's interesting to point out that this ratio depends on the number of atoms in a very, very strange way. It depends with the 1 over 15 power of number of atoms. So it's very, very difficult to change this parameter in experimental conditions. Even if you consider the first and smallest numbers of the n number of n in the Gillet trap and the highest value of n achieved at MIT, this parameter here is practically the same. And as usual, there is no difference in these experimental conditions. And this is due to the fact that changing n is not crucial to change this coefficient. Typically, the chemical potential is 1/3 of the critical temperature in all experiments. Why is this parameter is interesting? The reason is that one can find that in the thermodynamic limit, so when n is enough large to neglect finite size corrections to thermodynamic functions, all the thermodynamic behavior is fixed by a single parameter, in addition to temperature, of course, so which is given by this parameter here. So this is a scaling parameter that characterizes all the thermodynamic behavior of these systems. Here I give the explicit dependence of this parameter on the relevant coefficients characterizing the trap. And it's also interesting to write this parameter as a ratio between the critical temperature calculated in the ideal Gauss gas, and this energy, which is the only energy that you can construct in a uniform system, starting from the scattering length. So this expression in particular is interesting because it shows that in the thermodynamic limits, where n goes to infinity and omega 0, the frequency of the trap, goes to 0, so that the critical temperature keeps a fixed value, this parameter is fixed. And so this is a relevant thermodynamic parameter to discuss our problems. In particular, there are, in some cases, some analytic results that you can obtain. In particular, the quantum depletion at zero temperature can be expressed in terms of this parameter. The shift of the critical temperature due to interactions can be written in terms of this parameter. And since some speakers have discussed about the collision of frequencies, I have also added how near TC the collisional frequency, which is the inverse of collisional time, depends on this parameter here. It depends on the fifth power, and since eta is a very small number, this coefficient is very, very small. But then there is this factor n to the one-third, which can compensate, and this product can be of the order of 1, and this happens at MIT. And so that in that case, the collisional frequency and the collective frequency, which are the order of omega 0, are of the same order, and so one has a situation in between the collisional and the collisionless regimes. So the excitations with energies of the order of omega 0 can be measured directly. These are the normal modes. But also the excitation with energy larger than omega 0 are interesting because they fix the thermodynamic behavior and are relevant for statistical properties of the system. But in some cases can be even measured, as has been pointed out in experiment at MIT. In particular, one can observe, even if energy is much larger than omega 0, phonons propagating in the system. In all these cases, an important question is to understand what is the role of two-body interactions in order to make a quantitative description of all these quantities. I will mainly discuss situation at zero temperature, and so the good theory to work with is the time-dependent Gauss-Peter-Jeschke equation, for which in the linear regime there are now many numerical calculations. It's interesting, and I will very briefly discuss this point, to point out the existence of an analytic solution of these equations, which can be achieved in the Thomas Fermi limit. And this point brings us to the hydrodynamic formulation of the dynamics, hydrodynamics in the sense of superfluids, not in the sense of collision or dominated. In fact, if we write the order parameters in terms of the modulus and the phase, we can look for equations. We can rewrite the Gauss-Peter-Jeschke equations as an equation for the density and for the velocity field, which is given by the gradient of the phase. And if we neglect the quantum kinetic energy terms, which are essentially connected with the hypothesis of Thomas Fermi regime, where all physics is dominated by two-body interaction and by external potential, then the equations in the linearized form take the form of the equations of propagation of sound. And so these are valid for omega, for energy smaller than the chemical potential, because we have neglected quantum kinetic energy terms in the pressure, which are sensitive to gradients of the density, and so they can be neglected only if we are working the long wavelength limit. So what about the solutions of these equations? First, if we neglect the R dependence in the density, so we assume a uniform system, we have, of course, traditional phonons, whose velocity is fixed by the scattering length. Now, first question to discuss is whether phonons can propagate in these gases. The answer is yes, if one is able to satisfy simultaneously two conditions. First one, the wavelength of the phonon should be much smaller than the size of the system, because only in this way we can neglect the inhomogeneities in the density, and so we can obtain phonon solutions for the system. However, the wavelength should not be too small, because it should be much larger than the coherence length. This is a crucial condition in order to have phonons. If we have no interaction, we cannot have these conditions, but if we have interactions, we can satisfy. And this condition can be satisfied in particularly favorable way if we work in SIGO configuration. And so this is a typical SIGO trap at MIT. This is the length of the condensate, the axial length, and this is the radial length. And so we need, in this geometry, we need the wave vector much larger than the events of the length in the axial direction. We need the wave vectors which should be smaller than the momentum associated with the phonons, which is equivalent to imposing that wavelength should be larger compared to coherence length. It's also interesting to see that if the trap is enough deformed, then we can fulfill also this condition. So the wave vector can be larger compared to the inverse of the axial size, but can be small compared to the radial size. So the wavelength is larger, much larger, can be much larger than the radial size of the system. If this happens, then we can say that we are propagating one-dimensional phonons. It's interesting to see that in this case, the sound velocity is fixed by the chemical potential with an extra factor 2 that was pointed out by Zaremba, which gives a different relationship between the sound velocity and chemical potential in these configurations. At MIT, this condition can be very well fulfilled. And here are the numbers which give the scales of all the various quantities that we need. And in fact, the propagation of phonons have been observed experimentally. These are well-known figures on the Kettler group, where a laser pulse has created a wave packet, and this wave packet propagates, and the linear slope here permits to extract the sound velocity, and this sound velocity can be compared with theoretical predictions, and the agreement is rather satisfactory. However, this propagation of phonons correspond to energetic excitations with energies which in the average are much larger than the oscillator energy. So if we want to study low energy modes, one should look for the full solution of the hydrodynamic equation, accounting for the non-uniform profile of the density distribution. In the presence of harmonic trapping and the spherical configuration, one can solve analytically this problem, and one gets a dispersion relation for the elementary excitations in terms of the relevant quantum number, angular momentum, and number of radial nodes. And it's interesting to compare this dispersion with the prediction of the non-interactive model. And so the difference between these two expressions give the difference between the p square over 2m behavior of free particles in uniform gases and phonons, which are linear in momentum in interacting systems. The shape of this oscillation should be classified in terms of angular momentum, and these are typical shapes, the monopole oscillations, quadrupole oscillation. And this physics brings some connection also with the physics of other finite systems like atomic nuclei and atomic clusters and metal clusters, where these oscillations are investigated with similar theoretical strategies. The dispersion law given in harmonic traps can be generalized also to the case of the deformed configuration. This is important because most experiments are done in deformed traps. In particular, for the lowest m equals zero modes, one obtains a coupling between the quadrupole and the monopole oscillations of the spherical configuration. And if the actual frequency is much smaller than the radial one, as happens at MIT, the lowest solution has this behavior, this factor square root of 5/2, which practically gives the very good agreement between experiments and theory for these modes, and confirms the validity of the aerodynamic picture, especially if one compares with the prediction of the ideal gas and with the precision of measurements, which is very high in this case. So one could say why aerodynamic theory in this case is so accurate. So the answer is simple, because the criteria for applying the theory of aerodynamics of superfluids in this case is satisfied in a very excellent way. In particular, the Thomas Fermi limit and the condition of Fono regime are very well satisfied, because in the experimental conditions, these are typical numbers that one can estimate very easily, starting from the data for the scattering lengths, oscillator lengths, deformation, and number of atoms. Of course, it's interesting also to study a deviation with respect to the hydrodynamic regime. And in particular, if one takes a smaller value of n, then one can observe effects which are more single particle-like in the collective oscillations. And this is the situation that was for the first time explored in experiments, because the first experiment on collective excitation was done at GILA with a number of atoms of the order of 1,000. And one can see here that the transition from the hydrodynamic regime to the non-interacting model can be seen, even if to observe these effects in a more quantitative way, one should go to a much smaller value of n, and this probably is not easy for diagnostics. The discussion on the Segal trap suggests that it's interesting to investigate in more details the behavior of elementary excitations in strongly deformed traps. And in fact, one can do more systematic work in this direction, and one can find analytic solutions for the lowest mode if one takes the Segal configuration and this configuration. I would like to focus a little on the Segal configuration. Here, the case n equal 1 corresponds to the dipole, the case n equal 2 to the quadrupole mode observed at MIT, and then one can generate higher states, which contains more nodes in the density, and so cannot be easily produced by modulation of the harmonic trap. One should use different techniques like laser and excite these oscillations at the proper frequency. However, it's important here to discuss another point, and so that when we say that the deformation is very high in the sense of the Segal shape, this does not mean that we are working in a one-dimensional regime. In fact, if you work in a one-dimensional regime, you get a different dispersion relation, as pointed out by Ho and Ma. And I would like very briefly to show what is the reason of this difference, because it's important to understand whether experimental traps are really produce a 1D world or not, or 2D world, of course, it's the same. And I would like to show what are the rules to derive the square root of 5/2 law for the quadrupole excitations. We have started from a three-dimensional world, and we have used Thomas Fermi approximation in all directions, also in the radial directions. And this implies this condition for the chemical potential and for the frequencies. In this case, you get this relation. Instead, if you work in one dimension and you want to to freeze the all the degrees of freedom in the radial variables, then you must satisfy this condition, and then you will get this dispersion law, which gives for the n equal to a different dispersion relation. In the Seeger trap at MIT, typically mu is 30 times the radial frequency and 400 the axial one. And so definitively we are in the first condition, and this is the reason why the agreement with the square root of 5 half is so good. How much time? Yes. Fifteen minutes. Okay. Coming to the question of phonons versus discrete modes, I think that the understanding of the analogy between phonons and discretized collective excitation can be well understood if one looks at cylindrical geometry. So in cylindrical geometry, but harmonic confinement in the radial direction, you can obtain this dispersion law for the sound waves propagating along the z-axis. And C1 is the sound velocity in one-dimensional type sound velocity that was first found by Zaremba. And these are fifth correction due to the fact that Q these are fifth correction to the limiting case where Q is much smaller than the inverse of the radial size of the system. If we work with harmonic trap,
it's 1 divided 2 in the case when there is Thomas Fermi.
Of course, this is Thomas Fermi. So the original word is always 3D. Okay.
Yes. Because yes. If exactly one-dimensional case, it would be unity.
Of course, and you have not this term here. In fact, this is an interesting point because the dispersion here is negative, and this is an effect of three-dimensionality of the initial problem. If we work with the harmonic trapping in all three directions, and we take this limit of actual frequency much smaller than the radial one, then we can obtain a similar expression. This is the formula I already shown in previous transparencies. This is the first correction that one can calculate. So now, if we take a large quantum number n, we can describe this discrete mode as continuum states, and we can identify by comparing this term with this the sound velocity. And then if we put this identification here, we get again the result that we have in the cylindrical geometry. In other words, we obtain the propagation of phonons, including the first dispersive correction to the linear regime. And so this clarifies completely the nature of these excitations, which are phonons if we excite high values of n, and are collective modes in the traditional sense if we consider the small values of n. I would like to discuss very briefly the question of collective versus single particle excitations. This, I think, it's interesting because it points out the difference between the behavior of uniform gases and trapped gases. So in uniform gases, we say that we have phonons if the energies are smaller than chemical potential, and single particle if the energies are higher than chemical potential. However, in the trapped case, situation is different because inside the condensate, we have the same situation. But we can also consider the original space outside of the condensate. And this is very important because when we excite thermally the systems, practically all the particles lie outside the condensate. And so they do not overlap anymore differently from what happens in the uniform configuration. The single particle nature of these low energy excitations, this is very well understood if one takes an artifact picture for the potential. In this case, in Thomas Fermi limit, one gets a very simple form for the artifact Hamiltonian. And one can see that here we can put many states of single particle nature, essentially, which form the thermal bath And then there are interesting questions of interactions of the condensate, and that might be probably the origin of interesting phenomena like Landau damping and other things.
Maybe you would explain the second row, why it's outside, because condensate in this case outside as well, because it's when the potential varies.
Of course, when the particles are outside of the condensate, if you take a semi-classical picture, you have no condensate in this region, in the Thomas Fermi limit, and consequently the atoms behave freely, but they feel the chemical potential, of course. And in fact, the chemical potential is crucial to give this form to the artificial Hamiltonian.
But the utilization of condensate and particles always from the left and new is the same.
No, if you consider the exterior particle state that you can build here, they can be localized if they have enough energy, and in fact there is a scale of energy which fixes the condition you probably are referring to, and I will come very soon to this point. To make this discussion more quantitative, we have calculated the density of states. Actually, this is the integral of the density of states, so the number of states as a function of energy. And we have considered, this is a spherical trap, we have considered the first, the full solution of for the excitation obtained by solving the linearized Gauss-Pitajski equation, so the Bogoliubov equations. These are the crossed points here. Then we have switched off all the effects which are relevant for collectivity, so the V components in Bogoliubov theory. And so we have developed the Hartree-Fock scheme, which we know is not correct to give the low energy excitation. But if you look at the density of states, you don't find any difference with respect to Bogoliubov predictions. So this means that the single particle type excitations are essentially dominant to give the density of states of the system and consequently all thermodynamic behavior. In the same figure, I have shown... Yes? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, okay, this, but to talk in the sense of symmetry, of symmetrization, you're right. So probably it's not... But this belongs to the tradition to use Hartree-Fock also for symmetrized states, so applied to bosons, essentially. So in this figure, the harmonic oscillator prediction, so without interaction, is also shown. So even if these states are single particle in nature, the interactions are important, and this comes from the fact that the chemical potential is quite different from zero in these systems, and so it affects the mean field felt by these interactions. It's also interesting to see here that the hydrodynamic picture completely fails to describe the density of states. And the reason, I think it's important to understand, because this failure of hydrodynamics is much below the chemical potential. So it's not true that we can go to value of chemical potential in order to use their own hydrodynamic theory. This is wrong. And the reason is that hydrodynamics fails much earlier than reaching the chemical potential in terms of energies. And this point was pointed out by by Petik, I think, first. And this is due to the fact that we have a limitation in the applicability of hydrodynamic theory for momenta which are larger than the inverse of the surface thickness. I don't discuss details here, but this gives a critical angular momentum that we can build with by applying hydrodynamic equations, and a critical energy above which hydrodynamics fails. And you see that this critical frequency is larger than the oscillator frequency, because it increases with n, but is smaller than the chemical potential. And so the transition from the collective to the single particle excitations is a rather interesting situation to explore. And here is a typical transitions that we have investigated by calculating the ratio between excitation energy over its angular momentum as a function of angular momentum for different values of n. For small n, for small momenta, we satisfy the criteria of applicability of hydrodynamics, and this in fact fits well with the hydrodynamic prediction 1 over square root of L. But when L increases, we go to the single particle picture, where this ratio is 1. This behavior is crucial if one wants to apply Landau criteria for superfluidity by applying some rotational frequency to the system. And in particular, in this way, one can calculate the critical frequency for generating instabilities associated with the surface mass. It turns out that this critical frequency is always larger than the critical frequency to generate a vortex. So from a certain point, this is not interesting, but from the other point, it can be interesting, because this result says that unless one introduces interaction effects between excitations, for fixed angular momentum equal to n, the vortex minimizes total energy. So there are no other ways to get lower energy with fixed angular momentum. So this, I think, should be taken into account for consideration about the instability of the vortex. I have 5 minutes or more. 3 minutes. So the last discussion I'd like to make concerns quantum vortices. We know that this is a very hot topic. I don't discuss all the general questions. I want to just to discuss here a possible procedure of detection of a vortex using spectroscopic techniques. The idea is rather simple. If we have no vortices, elementary excitations with angular momentum plus and minus Lz are degenerate. If we break time reversal invariance with a vortex, then we expect a splitting in these frequencies. So if we are able to measure the splittings, we can obtain information on the existence of these vortices. This problem has been investigated already by several people, either with numerical methods or with semi-classical perturbative procedures. The physical idea why a vortex can split these frequencies can be obtained here. So the relative shift of the frequency will depend on the ratio between the velocity of the vortex and the sound velocity. So the velocity of the vortex behaves like 1 over r, the sound velocity increases with r, and so we expect an effect like 1 over r squared, which is in principle small, but is larger than all other finite such corrections one can obtain in energetics, starting from the Thomas Fermi limit. And so the point is whether one can make this effect visible in the splitting of frequencies. We have developed a some rule approach to calculate these splittings. And so we have considered a distribution function associated with the quadrupole operators. We have considered the quadrupole operators, because these are the lowest modes, lowest multipolarity where we expect an effect, because the dipole modes should not be changed by the presence of a vortex, at least the dipole mode excited by the center of mass operator, which is the, this operator here without the square. So for the quadrupole, we have considered the m equal plus minus 2 modes, and we have built did some rules, which can be evaluated very simply using commutators. The fifth commutator vanishes because the operator f is local in coordinates, and so f plus and f minus commute. This second the second sum rule is essentially the analog of the f sum rule, and so this is more independent, gets contribution only from kinetic energy term. The third sum rule is the interesting part, because it gives the asymmetry in the distribution function between the two excitations. And if one calculates explicitly the commutators, one finds that this quantity is exactly given by the expectation value of angular momentum. So if you have angular momentum in the system, then you break this asymmetry, and if you assume, if you take, for example, a Feynman type ansatz for a distribution function, which should be a very good ansatz for in the Thomas Fermi regime where hydrodynamic theory works, then one obtains this formula for the splitting of the two states. So this splitting depends on angular momentum and decreases as one of r squared as expected from general argument. It's interesting to point out that if we put numbers here, we obtain a rather significant effect, in particular using these values, which are a natural value for a Gila trap, we obtain 10% splitting for the frequency. And so this is certainly much more than the experimental uncertainties in the measurements of this collective excitation. So if vortices exist, they should be visible in this way. Okay. Thank you. So the reason why the excitation frequency does not depend on the scattering length is a tricky point, because the frequency is typically a product between the sound velocity and wave vectors and momentum. So the momentum is given by a discretization of the system, and so it goes like 1 over L. L is the length of the system, while the sound velocity increases with L, and in this way there is no dependence on the size of the system, and for the same reason there is no dependence on the scattering length. So with respect to a situation in the box, we have a different configuration. In the harmonic potential, the values of frequencies do not depend apart from geometrical factors that one has to account for, depend on the interactions. In the box, the value of momentum, of discretized momentum, do not depend. So there is this symmetry between the situation in the box and the situation in the harmonic potential.
But there is only parabolic
I think it's only parabolic
one.
Yes.
I'm slightly puzzled about the fact that people think seems very general impression that it's very difficult. It would be very difficult to detect vortex motion in a harmonic trap. And I was wondering what's wrong with the obvious suggestion: you just take the trap down and look at the wave which the cloud and then spread out. Is it simply that?
No, but the excitation energy accumulated in the vortex is very, very small. So, so a level of release energy of these things, loss distribution, I don't think you can measure anything, because the excitation energy is proportional, is a fraction of the oscillator energy, oscillator frequency, while the energy per particle is of the order of chemical potential, can be 40, 50 times larger. And so, so if you decrease n, yes. Yeah, if you have a smaller value of n, yes, the energy of vortex is comparable with the ground state energy. But then probably other mechanisms do not favor vortices. So we would like to have vortices where the coherence length is much smaller than the size of the system. In this case, effects, energetics are not visible, I think.
Usually when you have nuclear, for example, or the anisakis excitation, it's a relay formula proportional L multiply L minus unity, but in your case, it's something different. Is it due to situations that we have now, soft material? Or what do
you mean? No, I think that the reason is that, in fact, this state should not be called surface mode. I think that there is some misunderstanding in the notation, because surface modes are something localized at the surface, and while these modes are...
No relay is coming?
Yeah, it's coming, but with exponential tails. Yeah, but the surface modes here are driven by the external field. So this dependence on angular momentum that is given by this surface, we call surface modes, is fixed by the external potential. And so there is no surface tension in the sense of nuclear or helium physics.
Can I make a mark on that? Because I think there is excess of the extra Thomas,
yeah.
The presence of the Thomas family, the rounding off produces,
yeah,
which does in fact affect surface modes in just the same way as
okay.
Surface tension.
So it does or does not?
It does. But it goes like 2 to the 4th log Q. As opposed to Q.
Yeah, but this excitation we are speaking, which goes like square root of L.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Okay, this in your picture are driven by some surface tension. I don't know.
There's an effective surface tension associated with the corrections for the Thomas family result. And that kinetic energy contribution gives you a logarithmic and so on penetration into the.
Yeah, but if you have if you are in the Thomas family limit, you can have these excitations. So this will give correction to the square root of L law.
But that is the analog of the surface.
Okay. Okay. You are right. Yes. In fact. Okay. Chris pointed out an important point. Yeah. So due to the fact that here these systems are in external potential, surface tension effects are a perturbative correction to the main term dominated by external potential. The same that happens in classical physics, where if you go to very small Q, you have something dominated by external term. If you have a system in external field, it's not surface tension the leading term in the giving the value of collective excitations. Okay. But